If the illusion of good music exists, isn't that just good music?
And welcome back to another episode of Exposing Ourselves. I'm Travis Ritchie, and this is episode 72. This is the show where we expose each other to new things. Matt, a big music fan, will assign me one of his favorite music artists to listen to each week, and I, a movie buff, will give him one of my favorite films, and we come together on this podcast to discuss it all. And with me, as always, is my very good friend,
Matt Rundquist. Hey, Travis, how you doing? This week, I watched the movie Parasite, and you listened to the band Bastille, which I think is appropriate because the Olympics just started.
They did. Vive la France. And,
I probably should pretend like I did that on purpose, but I did not.
No, well, you know, the technically our podcast came first before the Olympics started, so.
That's right.
There was no way to know.
And people aren't going to hear this episode till the Olympics are half over, so.
Right, exactly. Oh, well, that's okay. Have you watched any of the Olympics?
I have not been able to. I've been super busy. As you know, we're preparing for Girls Rock this week. I have overcommitted to a bunch of different bands as a drummer, which is exciting because it makes me practice more and makes me keep up my skills and everything. And drumming is very much something that requires regular practice. It's not like riding a bicycle where you stop doing it for 10 years and then you just hop right on the bicycle and ride. Like, you really do have to practice regularly. The muscle memory and the skills that are necessary for playing the drums effectively are very perishable. So
I'd imagine it's like playing a sport, tying in the Olympics a bit, if I can.
So I did a jam session yesterday with this band that's sort of a folky, bluesy country thing. A friend of mine who, I don't know if you remember All Messed Up from last winter, the guitarist from that group has this other band, and they asked me to sit in on the drums and see how things were. And it was fun. I had a really good time at the jam session. I don't know if that's going to develop into a regular gig or not. I don't know if I have time for it to develop into a regular gig, but I had a really good time playing with them yesterday, and sometimes that's all you need is to have a good time. So like I said, we've got Girls Rock coming up this week. We loaded all the gear in today. We're going to be hitting the ground tomorrow. I will be assistant bass instructing for this one, or maybe I'm the bass instructor now. The person who was the bass instructor dropped out, and then another person is coming in. But I think maybe I'm the guy now. I'm not sure. It's all very
maybe
hazy.
You're the guy and they're the assistant, or
yeah, maybe something you'll like that. Yeah.
Okay.
And then on Wednesday, our band Tea Service, which is the band that sort of evolved out of my solo project Panko Stankhole, is having our first public private performance, which is to say we're going to be performing for the campers at Girls Rock. So it's not open to the public. I can't invite your mom or anything. I obviously will invite your mom the first time we have an actual show, but we are just going to be performing for a bunch of 8 to 14 year old girls and gender expansive youth. And I'm cautiously optimistic, excited. I'm excited because all I have to do is sit back there and drum. I don't have to. I have the kit between me and the audience. If they throw things, they're very unlikely to hit me. I think it'll be a good time.
That sounds great. I heard that West Allis was in the news this week as well, which
West
again,
Allis
will be
was
old
very
news.
Much in the national news. So Kamala Harris had a campaign event here in West Allis that was originally scheduled for the vice president to speak. And then when her campaign sort of became official and when she kind of unofficially got the nomination, she spoke here just 2 miles from my house at West Allis Central High School. And it was a big deal. There was a big rally and people are very excited.
They apparently had to upgrade the location to a bigger place.
They did have to upgrade the location. I'm not sure where the original location was because a high school gymnasium is not that large, right?
Yeah. Yeah. But that was pretty cool. And it was the day after, apparently, right? The day after Biden withdrew?
I think it was her first. So there was one little speech that she gave the day before that was sort of like, I'm running. But this was like the first like campaign event that was like open to the public that, you know, Democratic donors got invitations to, et cetera. I had several friends who went. The podcast listeners will be unsurprised to learn that we are not supporters of Donald Trump. And so it was, I think, really invigorating for a lot of people to hear that we can vote for somebody that we are at least moderately excited to vote for,
right,
rather than somebody who is
resigned to vote for
very him. Old and a great guy, but, you know, probably too old to do the job. So,
yep. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I was very excited to hear the news and then to hear that West Allis specifically was the first big place.
What a weird. It was pretty exciting. It reminds me a little bit of when Tiger Woods became a professional golfer, and the first tournament that he played was a tournament that no longer exists called the Greater Milwaukee Open. It's just a footnote to history. He didn't win. It's not. There's not like we don't get any kind of lasting benefit from it, but it is a little footnote that he became a professional golfer in Milwaukee.
That's
and
neat.
Kamala Harris became a professional presidential candidate in West Allis.
That's great. I hope that Wisconsin plays a significant role in getting her elected.
Yeah.
So we'll
all
see.
Right. Well, Travis, what did you do this week?
Oh my gosh, man. It was not a slow week for me. I did a bunch of things. I had to write them down. So I did do some writing on the book.
Excellent. I'm glad to hear that my regular reminders are doing a lot of good.
Hey, well, you're a little bit lacking in your regular reminders, my friend. But
I think I've given you two now.
Two, I think. Yeah, which is, I appreciate it. It's better than none. But the other day, probably Wednesday morning, I woke up. I'd slept in. I think it was because I'd woken up with a headache and I took some Excedrin and went back to bed for like an hour. But then I woke up to a phone call from a friend, an acting friend, who I know a little bit, but she was positively gushing about how much she loved the book.
Aww.
And she just had to call me and tell me how much she loved it. And so, and it's not a person that I would have ever expected to be into like a sexy gay vampire novel. You know, she's a older lady and, you know, with a...
Yeah, I think you're maybe misunderstanding the market for romance novels. That sounds...
But it's not a romance novel. That's the thing. It's not like a capital R romance novel. It's much more a vampire thriller with some realistic depictions of sex.
This is true. But there's definitely sexy bits.
There are sexy
spice.
Yes, there is. So that was really nice. And then I did some writing. I played tennis for the first time in a long, long time. I think in a year, I finally got together with a friend of mine to play some tennis, which was lovely. I was better than I expected to be. I went to see but last night I was up late because I had a busy day yesterday, Hollywood pool party, and then I went to play some poker with some friends, and I got home late, but then saw that there was going to be a rocket launch scheduled from Vandenberg Air Force Base, which is up the coast a ways, like a ways up the coast. But apparently you can see the rocket launchers from LA, you know, and I've never been able to. I keep missing them, and I'm always mad at myself. But this one was coming up at like 2:30 in the morning, and so I was like, I'm going to stay up. I'm going to stay up, and I'm going to see if I can go outside and see it. And I did, and it was really
nice.
Cool.
That is really awesome.
So I was able to just watch this rocket just shoot into space, and not from up close or anything. It was, hundreds of miles off, but it was kind of crazy to be able to see this thing go up and just watch it.
Yeah, it makes you feel a little bit like you're living in the future, you know?
Yeah, and it's weird because I posted just a day or two before, I posted a story on Instagram of myself watching the International Space Station fly overhead.
Okay.
Because I have this app that tells me whenever it's going to fly over because it knows where it is and I am and the sun is, so that it'll reflect the sun's light to me because it doesn't. You know, it's just a piece of metal, right? But it's amazing to me that we, as a species, put essentially a building into space that people live in, and it flies around the Earth several times a day. And I just think that's kind of incredible.
It's really not a very good building, you know.
But it is a building. Like it's
habitat. It doesn't have a famous architect. You really can't fit that much stuff in it.
I mean, NASA's pretty
famous.
The
design is hideous. You know, I don't know.
All right.
Aren't we better than that?
We will be. I mean, it's an old. But the thing is, it was put up in like the 90s. So yeah.
Yeah, this is true. This is true. It's funny. I still think of the ISS as a very new thing, but of course it isn't. Hey, Travis, you should definitely send me a link to that app, and I can put it in the show notes too, so that
Yeah, it's called Sky Guide. If anybody's curious, it's my favorite app for looking at stars.
Okay, well, I guess I don't need to put it in the show notes now.
Yeah, you could. So what else? I did go see, maybe this is a good way to kind of segue into the meet. I went to see Deadpool and Wolverine, which is the latest movie from the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And I will say that it represents everything you do not like about superhero movies. And I enjoyed watching it. Right? I enjoyed the experience. It was fun. It was tons and tons of fan service, a lot of Easter eggs, very meta, very like rewarding of people who watch a lot of superhero movies and know the kind of like ins and outs of the industry, you know, related to the making of superhero movies. But it didn't have a lot of heart. And one of the things that I am hoping someday to illustrate to you or maybe have you watch one of the superhero movies that I love because it does have heart, and this movie lacked that, and so I thought that was interesting. I'm very kind of like on the good side of meh for Wolverine and
Deadpool versus Wolverine. No heart.
It's not versus, it's an and, it's an ampersand. Oh. So it's they're together, it's a team up.
All right, so. Cool.
Yeah, although there is a lot of verses in the movie, but that's all in service of them coming together. And what's at least good is that, as far as team-ups go, many years ago we had the Batman v Superman movie, or vice versa. And the idea of Batman v Superman is ridiculous. The idea that they could go up against each other and Batman would be anything other than a smudge in the pavement is ridiculous. This movie at least pits two characters against each other that are fairly evenly matched. They both have healing abilities that allow them to heal from any wounds. And so, but that has the downside of there not really being any stakes to their fights because
they can
stab each other through the nuts, you know, repeatedly and have no ill effects that are lasting.
Well, we do love stakes. And in case any of our audience was wondering, we also now know whether you prefer Superman or Batman.
I like them each for different reasons. Superman is actually my original hero from when I was a kid. I love Superman, and for various reasons, I think he has not been understood well in movies.
I think we should definitely put that on a t-shirt. I love Superman for various reasons.
that's a decent t-shirt. So anyway, and Batman I also love for different reasons. But the idea of someone who is not a superhero taking it upon himself to exemplify himself and fight crime has its own, you know, intriguing elements. So
yeah.
Anyway, we should get to the meat. For sure.
Yeah, we should get into the meat, the entree, the main course, the steak, as it were.
Ooh, speaking of steaks, here we go. Do you want to shake things up and do the movie first?
Yeah, I do want to shake things up and do the movie first. Let's do it. Hey, Travis, tell me about Parasite.
Oh, man, I will. So Parasite, I undersold it when I gave you the description last year. Maybe not for the reasons you think. Parasite is a 2019 movie from South Korea. It is subtitles movie, so it's not dubbed. You can only watch it with subtitles, as far as I'm as far as I'm aware. And it kind of hit the world by storm in 2019 to the point where it actually won Best International Feature at the Oscars and Best Feature. So it was Best Picture for the year, I guess the first Oscars that were happening kind of in the middle of the pandemic, I want to say.
It would have been before
the shutdown, right? So it would have been, but early 2020. And it managed to take home the top prize, which I had forgotten and not sure I agree with, but it's an interesting movie, to be sure. It is about a family that kind of worms its way there. It's a down on the luck family, a mother, father, sister, and brother. And the brother lucks into a job tutoring the daughter of this rich family. And they kind of manage to worm their way, all four of them, into jobs working for this rich family. And I think that's kind of the parasite of it. But then there are twists. There are unexpected developments that happen. We'll get talking into spoiler territory for sure. But before I even go much further, I guess it's a good enough time to ask, what did you think of Parasite?
Yeah, I would agree with you that it's an interesting movie. And I will absolutely confess that I was not looking forward to this experience. And as a matter of fact, I started it with, we're going to be honest, a bad attitude. I was like,
why?
Travis is having me watch yet another horror film. This movie is going to be such a bummer. And he knows I don't like movies that are bummers. And this is, you know, I got to sit and watch and read all the words because it's not in English, and I don't generally mind foreign films, but I don't love being required to stare at the screen and read the words. And I will say this movie does suffer a little bit because it's a gorgeous movie. It's really well shot. It's really well designed. It's very, very pretty. It's got a nice full color palette. It's not like overwhelmingly like blue or orange or whatever, you know, whatever mm-hmm. the flavor of the day and color correction is. Like, it's a really pretty film. And yeah, so anyways, point being, I was not looking forward to the experience. And this movie kind of won me over. Not totally. Like, I felt like it was pretty overlong, and tonally it was kind of all over the place. And I did have trouble keeping some of the characters separate, especially because some of them are cast deliberately to be very similar to one another, like in body shape and everything. Like, not just in a, wow, Asian faces can be difficult to distinguish sometimes, but like, bodily, the characters look very, very similar to one another.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so that's just like an extra like mental tax when you're trying to watch the movie. But it's good, right? It is a fascinating story, and it has a beginning and a middle and an end. It doesn't like leave you super duper hanging. There's definitely some twists, right? You said the parasite is this family, but really there's like multiple parasites because the family has a domestic helper, a sort of a nanny, sort of a maid, sort of a general helper. And
yeah.
They push her out, but she has a secret, which is that her husband is in the basement of this house.
Yeah, the secret
bunker.
I can't
remember what exactly. There was some motivation. He was hiding from a bookie or something. I can't remember.
Yeah, he had gotten himself into debt with the previous he had gotten himself into debt, and she was employed by the previous owner of the house, the designer of the house. And so when that guy moved out, she took that opportunity to move her husband into the bunker, which the new family didn't know about.
Right. So it was like was it supposed to be like a safe room or something? What was that?
Yeah. Yeah, if North Korea should attack, this is a place that the rich people could have gone down to. Yeah.
It was one of those things where when I saw it, I was like, what is this bizarre concrete basement slash wine cellar thing, right? Like, because there's like multiple stairways and multiple long hallways, and it's not like a traditional basement where you just like walk down into it. And so I was confused, but I was like, there's probably a reason for this and I'm just not following it. So thank you for that. So anyways, the performances are all really good. There's a creepy plot about the son having a romantic relationship with his 2T that I don't know that it really adds a whole lot to the movie and just feels kind of gross.
In fact, it was super distracting for me, not so much because it feels gross, because they're both essentially kids, but I thought that was... It felt like such a red herring to me, because when the friend who offers him mm-hmm. the job talks to him about this girl, mm-hmm. he says, oh, when she goes to college, I'm going to ask her to marry me or something like that, right?
Yeah.
And so I, watching this movie the first time and even the second time, felt that whole thing felt like such a setup, right? Like, mm-hmm. like it felt like, it felt like that guy who's like, oh, I've got free tickets to this cabin in the woods and it's there's no strings attached. And that is exactly what that moment felt like to me. And to have there be no real payoff to the cabin in the woods, like there wasn't anything supernatural. Like I was thinking it felt supernatural as a setup, mm-hmm. right? And then the girl, and then later on in the movie, the hero boy, the son of the family, the new tutor, he says the exact same thing in kind of the exact same way, in a way that makes it feel like he's being brainwashed by this girl somehow, but that's not at all the case. It's just a weird little thing in the writing.
I would say this movie does throw a lot of threads in the air, many of which don't get followed to their conclusions. Mm-hmm. And there's one way to say, well, that's what life is like, right? Life is not a pat story where every thread is wrapped up. But there's also a way to say, well, this is a movie, and sometimes you do need to, like, pay things off. And a lot of things are paid off, right? But, like...
Some things are set up and paid off really, really well.
Yeah.
I'll give it that.
Yeah. So... I don't know. What do I want to say about this, though? It's very fresh in my mind because I literally just watched it before this episode. But it does...
That's funny.
Like, I mentioned earlier, it does feel overlong. There does, to me... And maybe this is just a cinematic choice. Like, some people like a really, you know, contemplative movie. And I'm okay with contemplation, but like it's 2 hours and 13 minutes that maybe could have been closer to 2 hours. Yeah. I guess 2 hours and 13 including credits, but you know, could have been closer to two including credits.
Sure. Gotcha.
I liked it, right? I liked it and I did not expect to like it, which means it had to overcome the burden of expectation. But I didn't love it. It may very well be the best movie of 2019. There's a lot of crummy movies.
I don't know.
Out
we've
there.
Seen two
know.
Other movies. We've seen already. We watched 1917.
Yeah.
Which I really loved and kind of thought
was
better.
Yeah, I would say I like 1917 better than this.
And we watched Joker, which I also personally thought was better. But yeah, The couple of things that got me were like logical problems where, for instance, the way they get rid of the family's driver so that the dad can take his place is that the girl, when she gets, so the sister is the second person in, right? She mm-hmm. gets in because the mother mentions that the son is an artist and that her little son is an artist. And so, the poor family's son, who was already there, says, oh, I know this woman who is an art therapist, and gets his sister in
the family. He is both an artist and a little bit of a holy terror. Right.
Yeah. And so, which is convenient. And so, I gotta say, the poor family that worms their way in is fairly smart about it. They're fairly intelligent and crafty in the way they get their way into this family. And it's not really a nefarious thing that they're doing, except for the fact that they're putting other people out of their jobs. They're not trying to take over the family. They're not trying to take the family for everything they've got. They just want jobs, right?
Yeah.
Because they live in squalor. And so, anyway, when they get, in order to get the driver out of the picture, the girl who is getting a ride home from one of her sessions, one of her art therapy sessions, pulls off her panties in the car and kind of hides them in the car. And her plan works perfectly. The head of the household is in the car, finds the panties, blames the driver. Driver is fired. But he also could have found the panties, blamed the girl who left the panties, and fired her.
Well, he didn't know whose panties they were. And well, there's no reason
the last
to
girl
assume
in the
that,
car.
They're that girl's panties.
Well, except that they do say, oh, they question her and say, oh, you know, someone gave you a ride home. You know, we gave you a ride home. Did anything happen? And instead of taking her word for it, it could have, you know, they could have taken the word of the employee who was already in their employ. That was one little thing. They kind of justified that. Okay. But then, like, one of the other moments is one of the other key things in the movie is that the light in the hallway is linked to a switch down in the sub basement, and a person in the switch is able to just turn the light on and off, like in Morse code.
Yeah.
And if I were living in that house,
and
had a light that was constantly flickering, and I could not figure out why, that light would not just be sitting there flickering.
That was really artificial. Like, that was like, I'm making a point right now.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It did not feel like this is a normal thing that normal people who are not in a movie would do. Either from the basement perspective or the perspective of the people living in the house with this light constantly flickering.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's the thing that gets me about this movie. And ultimately, I did like it as well. But I think that there are a number of instances where that thing of these people are doing things because they're in a movie, not because it's the way normal people do things.
Sure.
And perhaps they're only doing it because that's what the script says they should do rather than that's what normal people would do. So that was tricky for me too.
This movie has a really interesting structure, right? It builds pretty quickly, actually. Like, it kicks off pretty fast, right?
Yeah.
They start worming their way into the household. Things happen. It slows down a fair bit in the middle, but then there's this big event where they have a party. The guy escapes from the basement. There's all kinds of, like, blood and violence. And then there's this long 15 or 20-minute denouement, right? Where the father who had been the driver moves into the basement. The son, you know, communicates with him a little bit, but then also gets
a message
somehow
from him. Yeah.
In a way that
somehow decides to get rich.
Yeah,
he decides to get rich.
The Emperor returned.
So I guess my question for you is, do you think that was meant to be literal or is that fantasy?
I don't know, right? I will say that if it is fantasy, the director didn't tip his hand at all, right?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It was played literally, right?
Yeah, it was played literally. Like, I'm going to get rich somehow and move into the house and let you out, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. So, point being, that took up a lot of time to not really say a whole lot. And, you know, maybe
kind of a happy ending for the quote unquote heroes of the movie, which should be this family, I guess, is treating as a dark hero. But and that's a kind of a very Asian thing to do, where in their stories, their characters tend to be more complex than ours. Their heroes have villainous aspects, and their villains have heroic aspects.
Yeah.
So I do not mind that so much, but I'm not quite sure where I ultimately landed, and I guess I don't know why this movie was quite so lauded.
I would agree, because I looked up the Wikipedia on this as well. I saw it won the Palme d'Or in addition to the Oscar, and that it was the first movie in 60 years to have done so. Very impressive. But also, it, like a lot of movies that win the Palme d'Or, it's like, okay, you know, it's very artsy, right? You know, and it's very stylish, which I alluded to earlier when I said it's very well shot and pretty. But yeah, I would agree with you that this doesn't necessarily add up to Best Picture. Like, I don't think it would have been a huge stretch to not nominate this movie for Best Picture.
Mm-hmm.
So for it to win is really kind of something.
Yeah.
You know, I actually really disliked The Joker. Certainly 1917 was really good. I don't know. It probably does feel to me like it might have been a weak year for Best Picture.
Maybe. I did love the acting and the directing in this movie, though. I will say that both of those, you know, the directing was very deliberate, and the shots and the camera work, you know, was all very well orchestrated. Mm-hmm. I even loved the scene and the structure, as you said, of bringing these people out of that sub basement apartment and even paying that off later on.
Yeah.
Worked very well, and the acting I really loved. The family, especially, they all were very convincing. Both families actually were quite good. I guess the two kids of the rich family were kind of nothing characters. But
I think one of the things that really people might have just latched onto is the originality of this. I don't know what I would even compare this to. If you were like, hey, what is Parasite like? I don't know that I know a lot of movies that Parasite is like. It does seem very original, right? And that goes a long way.
Yeah.
Especially amongst like movie people who do tend to see the same six or seven movies over and over again, right?
Mm, okay. Yeah.
So maybe that's what people really latched onto.
Yeah, and I get that, and I agree completely with it, although I also think that maybe one of the things I was missing, oh man, was I missing it? I was going to say a kind of a coherent theme, right? Rather than a bit of a jumble of themes. Because
you don't
of course
think it
there
was
is
the class struggle?
Classism, I feel like possibly. Yeah.
Like the way that people make choices based on what choices are available to them, I guess, rather than, you know, inherent goodness or evil.
Yeah, I guess there's that, which is kind of interesting. And also, like, the idea that rich people are disconnected from the troubles and concerns of society. I guess there's that, which is actually kind of a recurring theme in the director's work. So we watched Snowpiercer, which was another one of his movies.
Yeah.
Same director.
Which is real allegorical.
Yeah. Well, I mean, very similar premise. And also, he directed a horror movie called The Host, which I don't remember if I've actually seen. I remember when it was around, because the idea was this, Korean movie had kind of impressive special effects at the time. And I don't know if I've seen it, but then I did watch a movie called Okja, which is, it's spelled O-K-J-A. And I think it was a Netflix original, or at least they purchased it and aired
it. I remember
it.
Seeing ads for it.
Yeah. So that was a very interesting movie. And I might revisit that movie at some point. So I think he does have a a perspective for sure,
yeah,
as a director.
For sure. Yeah, even though I really disliked Snowpiercer and I'm kind of cumsy-gozy on this, I do think he's interesting, right? He's an interesting mm-hmm. filmmaker.
Yeah. Yeah, so I guess we're kind of feeling similarly in that we're not quite sure why this movie was so successful, but yet agreeing that it was still a decent movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, I don't know that I have a whole lot more to say. Do you want to do a rating?
I would love to do a rating. I think you'll be unsurprised to learn that this is a 7 for me. Comfortably above average, but not into that I loved it territory of 8, 9,
yeah.
10. It's
yeah,
good.
Yeah.
It's even, I would even say at times it's really good, but it's not great, and I didn't love it.
Yep. Same for me. 7. I think it firmly feels like a 7.
If that ever happens in the future, you have to just say same and then just nothing else.
Well, I think, aren't I required to say my rating? No. I would be concerned that you would ping me for not actually saying my rating out loud, for the record.
I don't know. I really like the structural idea of that joke, but
yeah.
Anyways.
Yeah. 7 up. 7 up for me. All right. Well, that's a tennis joke, because when you right, is it, you say love 15 up 15 all.
15
no, I guess
all,
never mind.
All is usually what.
Oh, can you erase that part? That was dumb. All right, tell me about Bastille.
Bastille is an English rock band that, and I've realized this is a little bit of a theme. It's very arena ready rock that I really like. They came out with their debut album in 2014. They had a huge hit called, it's not called Bastille, it's called Pompeii. And that was a big, big hit for them and propelled them to all kinds of success. A couple of years ago, they had a song with Marshmello that has billions of plays on YouTube. I almost made a mix for you of their stuff, but I decided to just go with their debut album, Bad Blood. I really like this album a lot. It's very listenable. It's got some, I would say, moderately interesting lyrical themes. But it's also just like good, listenable pop rock music that's like upbeat. Some of it's danceable even. Nothing too heavy here. And I dig it. What did you think of this, Travis?
I quite liked this album. And I'm glad you gave me an album rather than a mix for these guys. I did go ahead and listen to Happier, which is the song they did with Marshmello, because I just wanted to see what the most popular song these...
Yeah, what is 2 billion plays sound like?
Right. And it was fine
it's
for
funny,
my ear.
Because when I first heard Happier on the radio, I was like, man, this sounds like Bastille. You know, uh-huh. like it sounds a little bit like one of those YouTube things where it's like how to write a Bastille song. And then like
sure.
somebody just like assembles all the parts and it's like there's
I'm going to write a song in the style of Bastille.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, ChatGPT. That actually is one of the interesting things about this album is that it is they definitely have a sound of their own, right?
Yeah.
And the entire album is got quite a bit of variety in it as far as tone, pace, that kind of thing. And yet, every song is clearly in the same...
Do you think that's just the singer's genre. Voice? Because he has a pretty unique voice.
I think he has a decently unique voice. I don't think it's insanely unique. I think there is something about the way this band's music sounds beside the voice. But maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. I do think they make heavy use of bass, and I don't mm-hmm. mean the instrument, but a bass sound,
yeah.
Which I kind of liked, especially in my ears with headphones on, with earpods, and or AirPods, as it were. But yeah, I really liked they were identifiable, right? Because mm-hmm. we have had a couple of bands that feel a little generic at times. And this, I think, was not that. And so I appreciated that. I appreciated the good singing. I really liked that you could hear the words. This is definitely a singer first band. And I think I did a little reading on it, and it was formed by the singer after he originally did a solo, like he was just a singer apparently.
Yeah.
And then introduced other elements to be part of a band, which I thought was very interesting. So he's the head of the band, which I think is great. And yet the orchestration, as I talk about sometimes, is distinct, is purposeful, it is specific.
Yeah.
So why didn't I like it even more?
Yeah.
I guess is my question. Well, because I like it quite a bit.
I would ask that same question too, because like I love the song Pompeii. You know, it was played a lot on the radio and in my own personal streaming, and I never got sick of it, right?
Right, right.
But I don't throw Bastille on, and I'm curious, like, why that is. Like, what it is about this music that feels very... It doesn't stick with me.
Yeah, yeah. The Bastille will, I mean, Pompeii will stick in my head, and I'll, you know, every once in a while just be going, ba-da-da-ba-da.
Right. No, yeah. I mean, like, emotionally, it doesn't stick with me. Yes, they're very catchy, right?
Yes. Okay, so there's the thing. Emotionality, it doesn't, I had that same realization. It didn't really spark a feeling in me, and I think that that might be this band's Achilles heel. And I don't know if it's because it was maybe too produced, you know, and or maybe it's just not a band that has a core of real, like, exquisite talent, right? They're all very good. I mean, obviously the talent of the band is there, but I'm just like, you know how sometimes you have these bands like Journey or Queen that just are above and beyond, you know, and maybe this isn't just quite that. Maybe they're just very good.
Yeah, I think I'd like to go back to the concept about production, right? This doesn't feel like music that's played, right? And that's interesting to me.
Do you mean, like, by a band?
Yeah, like it's a band, right? But like you don't, if you think, if you sort of like listen to it and you're like, what are they doing in the studio? Well, somebody's sitting there at a computer and like playing around with bleeps and bloops. And they've probably got like a nice vocal track, like a tracking vocal going. And they've got a drummer who's like really going at it. But then you don't think of like, four people standing there staring at one another being like, what should we do next, right? It's all
being
very...
connected with each other and,
yeah, it's all very planned and, like, very... It doesn't feel organic at all, and it doesn't feel like these people would never jam together, right? They're not sitting around jamming. They're, like, programming and producing and... I don't think that's true of all electronic music even, right? I think there's some electronic music that does still feel very organic and, you know, played, right? But this doesn't feel played. This feels programmed. It feels, a little bit like a product rather than a passion.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I kind of get that. I definitely feel that as well. And it's funny because you mentioned electronic, and I felt a bit about how this music was a bit of an evolution of the kind of 80s music that I love, which has a lot of electronic. I'm like, it's a very kind of linear evolution for that kind of music. And so for that reason, I liked it quite a bit.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It just feels a little too on purpose.
Yeah, a little too on purpose. Yeah. No, that's true. Right. And like, I know all music is on purpose, right? All music is, but it does. Yeah. It's funny.
Yeah. Cause I'd also wanted to talk. It's a senseless thing for me to say, but it feels right. You get what I mean by it.
Yeah, I absolutely do. I absolutely do. There's also something that I kind of want to say. I said this about Muse when we listened to that band. That, and I think maybe the Killers, and there's a few other bands, and I would say they're mostly British, that feel like they come out with their first album and it's like ready to be played in an arena, right? Mm-hmm. Like you would never go to a dingy 75 person club and listen to them play this music because it wouldn't make sense. This is music that was meant to fill up a stadium.
Some of it. I definitely agree with you, but I do think I was hearing a lot of those kind of UK and even Irish music roots in this. And so every once in a while, my brain would go, oh, Irish, you know, and or Celtic or something like, you know, and so... But yes, I do agree. I get exactly what you're meaning by that analogy. That stadium.
Like you can
sound.
Sometimes you can see the heaving crowd, or watch, like in your brain, you can see the crowd singing along to a chorus and that sort of thing, right? Mm-hmm. And that's interesting, right? Because I just talked about how you don't picture people like looking at each other, working this music out, you know, playing, jamming, right? But for me, the picture that pops into my head is the crowd listening to this music, which is a weird idea, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I want to. I'm so curious as to why the Marshmallow song is so huge. Is it because of Marshmallow? Is he just gigantic?
Well, Marshmallow is very, very popular producer and DJ. He's had a bunch of big hits, but also that is a very, very catchy song with, I think, a positive, uplifting message.
Yeah, I'd have to listen to it again. It's funny because on YouTube Music, there's that, there's Happier, and then there's also Happier sped up, and then Happier slowed down with reverb. And I'm like, okay, they were... Interesting.
Yeah.
So I'll have to listen to it again. And I'm trying to find, you know, it doesn't look like in their list, YouTube, the way, if you go to an artist and you go to their songs in order to see their most popular songs, it doesn't show them in order from, in any particular order that I can see.
Right, most popular. I mean, usually the most popular one will be in that top three, but it won't necessarily be the first one.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I'm trying to find Best Deal, for example, and I'm scrolling way down, and it's not on the list that I can find. But it must be one of their biggest songs, right?
Well,
I don't know.
I mean, lyrically, it's funny because it sounds like it's an uplifting song, but it's actually kind of a bummer, right? Because it's one of those songs where it's like, I want you to be happier, and the way that you'll be happier is if I leave, right?
Yeah.
We're gonna break up, but I'm doing that because I want good things for you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I think the video for the song was really affecting. Now, I'm vaguely remembering this now, but I believe that the video is about a dog dying, which sounds like a joke, but I think it is actually.
Oh.
And so in that, it reconfigures the song a little, and some of the lyrics don't make sense in that context, but I do like the idea that it's not just about yet another broken human relationship. So you might actually look up the video and shed a tear or two because...
Oh, you know, my gosh. Well, now I kind of want to, but also don't want to, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. If you skipped it, right. I wouldn't be mad at you.
I didn't do the lyric thing. A lot of times I am compelled to try to look at the lyrics, either because I'm not understanding them or because I hear a piece and I want to know more. This was, I was fine with what I was hearing, and I wasn't compelled to delve deeper, which was, I don't know, interesting. So this is going to be an interesting rating exercise for this
one. Yeah, I think it's probably time to rate. What do you think, Travis? What rating are you going to give to Bastille's Bad Blood?
It's very good. The flaws are all like the feeling of flaws, you know?
Right, yeah.
So I guess if I'm going to be fair,
if the illusion of good music exists, isn't that just good music? Right?
I guess it is. So I am going to give this the illusion of a 9, I think.
Ooh, a 9. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because it was fun to listen to. I really enjoyed it. I listened to it on a hike, and I listened to it kind of on a walk and just puttering around the apartment. And
okay.
There's no bad part of this album.
I can dig that.
Yeah.
Boy, what do I give this? I don't know. It's funny going through our conversation. I've been like, I'm going to give it an 8. I'm going to give it a 7. I'm going to give it a 6. I'm going to give it a 7. I've been all over the map here.
I almost got down to 8 myself.
I'm probably going to land on 7, but maybe I should give this a 6. If I think about how often I decide to put this on versus some other music, I would say it's something I like, but it's also something that I'm happy to just have come up at random rather than throw it on.
Yeah.
So yeah. I'm gonna give this a 6. I'm gonna be a harsh father today.
Oh my gosh, that makes me want to change my review.
No, it's funny because I actually typed in 7 on our spreadsheet that you never look at. I actually typed in 7.
Like predictively to me or for you?
For me.
Oh, okay.
And then so you went 7. And then in between the time of me typing that and 5 seconds later, I was like, no, it's a 6. So honestly, if we had waited another 10 seconds, I might have given it an 8.
Oh, wow. Maybe I should go down to an 8.
I want you to know that so I don't know what to give this Bastille album.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll stay with what I've got. It probably is maybe a little generous, but...
I hate it when you change your rating after.
Great.
I feel like it betrays a certain lack of strength of character when you change your rating.
Make
your choice and live with your choices.
Okay. Yep. Yeah. Definitely don't grow as a human being.
Yeah. Don't grow as a human being. 100%. Look, if you came back a year later and wanted to give it a different rating, that would be fine.
Okay. Well, I'll see if I listen to it a year from now and change my mind. Hey, all right. Oh,
yeah.
Speaking of which, I did want to ask you something on the air. And did we talk about this already? And it specifically relates to the movie we watched. I want to resolve the subs versus dubs question with you. Do you have a strong preference? It's not an option in this case, but if you were watching a Miyazaki movie, would you rather read subtitles or listen to dubbed English?
I think it's funny. I don't have a strong preference, which some people are very, very much of the opinion that subtitles only, that's how you hear the original voices and whatever. But there's very talented voice actors out there. And yeah. I like dubs. I don't mind dubs. You know,
I don't have a
strong preference for dubs. Right?
I do.
Yeah.
I have a strong preference for dubs. I don't want to read my movie. If I can avoid
that's
it.
Fair.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. I just wanted to bring that up. I've been wanting to bring that up for months, I feel
well,
like.
Well, yeah. And honestly, I will say I would have preferred that this movie be dubbed because I felt like I kept being distracted from the visuals. Mm. Like sometimes I feel like it's pretty easy to follow, even though I'm reading. But this one, I wanted more of the visuals, and I kept being distracted by the words.
So. All right. Great. Cool. Well, what have you got for me for next week?
Next week, we got to do this a little bit quick, but
yeah,
I have an indie band called Rogue Wave for you. And I'm not even going to ask you if you've heard of them, because I know you haven't.
Not.
Yeah. Back in the early 2000s, I was buying Sub Pop albums without listening to them, just based on their releases from the label. And it turns out that the label always thinks that the music that they're releasing is good. So I bought a bunch of albums, and this was one of them. And there is a song on here, and I hope I don't get the name wrong. So I'm going to look at it. Oh, it's the first track on the album. It's called Every Moment. And I became obsessed with this song for a little while. And I listened to the whole album a bunch of times, but Every Moment is a great, great song to me. It's 2.5 minutes. little pop gem. Very, very cool. So I gave you the debut album from the band Rogue Wave. It's basically like a one-man band, Zach Rogue. There's only one other member of the band that's been with it since the beginning. They're still out there and still making music, but they haven't released an album since 2016 or 2017. So they're, I would say, a little quiet right now.
Uh-huh. That's okay. I am delighted that the guy's name is Zach Rogue, and he named his band.
I think it's a chosen name.
Well, I'm less delighted then.
All right, what do you have for me, Travis?
Since you gave me kind of an indie rock band, we're going to do something indie feeling for the movie and round out our Rian Johnson catalog of movies. And we're going to go back and watch his first movie. I think it's his first movie, called Brick. And it stars Joseph Gordon-Levitt. And it was a 2005. It's described as a neo-noir mystery thriller film. And I'll be honest with you, I haven't seen this movie since probably the late aughts, you know, shortly after it came out. And so I don't remember much about it, except that I think Joseph Gordon-Levitt is a high schooler, and it kind of takes place in a high school. Here we go. Most of the main characters are high school students. The film draws heavily in plot, characterization, and dialogue from hard-boiled classics, especially those by Dashiell Hammett, who I don't know what it is.
He's a mystery writer.
Great. All right. The title refers to a block of heroin compressed roughly to the size and shape of a brick. So there's that. I know, other than wanting to kind of revisit this after we've seen a bunch of other Rian Johnson movies, I don't remember much about this movie. I don't even remember if I liked it. So
remind me, what other Rian Johnson movies have we watched?
So Rian Johnson did the second Star Wars sequel.
No, I know that.
So
the one that you liked.
Things, oh, he did Knives Out.
Oh, okay, okay.
And I feel like something else. Looper. He did Looper.
Looper. Okay.
Yeah.
I like
that.
So
that was our other. Yeah, that was the. So this is kind of like another one of his movies that we can watch together.
Cool.
So it's kind of exciting.
Well, awesome. That sounds great. Hey, Travis, you know, if people want to tell us why we should have changed our ratings, what can they do?
Well, the easiest way to do it is to email us at exposingourselvespodcast@gmail.com, or you can find our posts on Facebook and comment on those and let us know what you think there, and we will pay attention, and we definitely like to hear from you. I personally would also love it if people would leave us a rating and a review on whatever podcast app they're listening to us on. If it's Apple Podcast, all you have to do is go to our show page, scroll all the way down to the bottom, and you can submit a quick review there. And I would love to hear what you think of the show.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much, Travis.
Hey, Matt.
Yeah?
Thank you for exposing yourself to me.
Well, thank you for exposing yourself to me.